Tired of the same old sports analysis? Then you need the SMQBs podcast. They're five attorneys, they're sports fanatics, and they're ready to make their case. Welcome to Sports Talk with an Edge. It's House.
I just think that's awful.
Rooster.
So that would be a quality pick if you can get that guy.
Hope.
God, he just loves the spotlight.
Milk.
Get rid of this guy. He's clearly a problem.
And Bison.
Oh my God, Rooster's still holding on to the public enemy grudge.
SMQBs, this is episode 214. Fellas, how's it going? Rooster, who are you bringing to a bar this week?
Well, I'm going to bring Pop again. We'll talk more about that later, but the Spurs finally made it official. He's stepping down as head coach. Health won't let him continue on, but he is going to continue on as El Jefe, according to the t-shirt he wore to the announcement. He's the team president. So, again, I just, the guy, he's a real renaissance man. I'd have a drink with him anytime.
That's a good call, having a drink with him anytime. Pope, what do you got?
I'm taking my new favorite Stanley Cup Pope team player, Mikko Rantanen, to the bar and congratulating him, buying as many Finnish shots that he possibly could get for the hat trick in the third period of Stanley Cup Game 7, first time ever, survived Dallas, and we'll talk about that a little bit more later, but Mikko is coming with me to the bar.
Pope was diligently watching. I was there. Milk, who are you bringing?
You looked that guy up like 10 minutes before the show.
I'm not going to ask you what his jersey number is, Pope.
96.
I'll stay on hockey. I'm going to, after a terrible first round for the Lightning, I'm going to bring John Cooper and our GM, Julien Brisebois, to discuss the future of this team that is now very far removed from multiple Stanley Cups, 12 of the last 16 postseason games they've lost, 3 years now in a row of first-round knockouts, several players in their mid-30s as we're aging. I need to know a plan here because what I saw last week was not very good or encouraging for our future.
It was a good run, Milk. It was a good run. Hey,
it was a good run.
We're talking hockey, so that means Moose Jaws here. Moose, who are you bringing to the bar?
Oh, Biz Nasty, Paul Bissonnette. He was absolutely phenomenal this past week doing his State of the Union Leaf address after they won the series on TNT and on Spitting Chicklets. He's wearing the Leaf alumni jacket, the Leaf tie. He's bringing Will Arnett on. I'm going to tell you, the Leafs are busy taking care of business. I'm bringing Biz to the bar.
All right. I like it. I like
big
it.
Big game tonight.
Yeah.
Big
all game. Right. I'm going to step out a little bit, and we might have to have carrots or apples at my bar because I'm bringing Secretariat or the ghost of. Because listen to this statistic. Maybe you guys heard this. All 19 horses in Saturday's Kentucky Derby are descendants of Secretariat.
Are you serious?
All 19.
I did not know that.
In some way. Secretariat sired more than 660 foals in his lifetime.
He's a little busy.
A little bit busy.
That's like Rooster.
Line him up.
The last was in 1990. But that is, I mean, that's unbelievable. Every horse had some relation. They said it's pretty common that most of the horses have Secretariat DNA. But this time, every
talk
single
about
one.
The Lucky Sperm Club.
Holy smokes.
Does he have to pay child support?
Oof.
It's descendants.
I think just the other way. I think it's just the other way around. So, right. All right, fellas. Let's get into something a little serious. Milk, you're going to talk about the state of the NCAA and particularly House v. NCAA. No, not our House, who we're missing tonight, but the lawsuit.
Yeah. Well, actually, House was brought this to the SMQBs a few weeks ago. It's an interesting week for this lawsuit. There is a deadline for May 7th, Wednesday. The judge is basically asking for any current scholarship athletes to be grandfathered into this new settlement, which is encouraging to hear so those people don't get screwed. But again, in case you don't know what's going on with this lawsuit, this will allow universities to pay student athletes. They've been getting paid, obviously, through the NIL, but that's outside the school system. That's through third parties, usually companies, you know, local auto dealers and things like this. This will actually allow students to pay up to $20.5 million of revenue generated at those universities to student athletes. Since House presented this lawsuit, some things have started to work out. A lot of the universities are starting to assign percentages to where this money is going to go. And not shocking, pretty much all the big schools, big conferences agree that about 70%.
It's all going to swimming, right?
Yes, swimming to the Olympic sports. Actually, we'll get to that. 75% will go to the football program, 15% to men's basketball, 5% to women's basketball. This is not for every school. This is just kind of the big ones have sort of agreed to this. And then 5% to other sports. But it will be school by school specific. The problem, and this came to light over the weekend, because if you didn't see, the Utah Utes program eliminated their women's beach volleyball program entirely. I think that was strategically done before this deadline on May 7th. But what's happened is, as part of this settlement, it set roster limits, which have increased. So under the old rule, like let's take football, for example, you had 85 on the roster. That was the limit. Now that's been increased to 105, which means that there's 20 more scholarships that these schools can give out. Well, where are you going to find the money for 20 more scholarships for the football program? Well, you're going to cut the women's beach volleyball program entirely, because those roster limits had increased to, like, I think it was from 6 to 19. So if you keep the program, you may have to fund 19 people on these rosters with scholarships now, or you could just get rid of it entirely, which Utah did. And I think more will follow suit. All of these Olympic sports will follow suit. And now you have more money for football, basketball, and so forth. So that $20.5 million, by the way, will increase at a 4% rate each year for the next decade. So it'll just keep going up and up and up. And, you know, I think what we talked about last time, you know, you're seeing the end of a lot of college sports that unfortunately don't bring in a lot of revenue. And now that these schools can pay players through revenue sharing, you know, they're going to favor sports like football.
Milk, how does Title IX play into this?
That's a great point. I mean, it's going to be a huge problem because this is school by school specific in terms of how they can allocate that money. I guess they have to still sort of, their Title IX is still in place, so they'll have to do some sort of matching with what a male athlete versus a female athlete can make. But inevitably, like some of these women, like take Caitlin Clark, for example, she can file a lawsuit against her own university now and say, you know, you guys weren't paying me enough, which is of course going to happen. So it's going to be a complete and utter train wreck, because all of these different athletes are going to say, well, I'm getting screwed and you're paying more over here to this program. And yeah, I mean, it's just going to lead to all sorts of lawsuits, and you're going to start seeing, you know, there's even talk about, you know, should we make these student athletes employees of the school itself for more transparency and more control and all of that kind of stuff. And I don't know. I think it's just going to be a complete disaster, and all of these different sports are going to start to be cut entirely. And I think that's just the tip of the iceberg. You saw that this weekend, and I guarantee you all these other universities are going to follow.
Milk, I have two questions for you. What do you think about my point from last week that this is going to benefit Big East basketball programs who don't have football teams and can give all that money to the basketball team that would have otherwise gone to football? That's going to happen, don't you think?
Absolutely. Right. Because, I mean, if there's not you can do it whatever way you want to. Now, the question is where are you going to get that money from? I mean, you have up to $20 million. Where do you get it from? You've seen some of these universities actually, like, start to tax their own fans. So, like, you've seen taxes on, like, season tickets. And they get an email basically saying, hey, if we want to compete in this environment, you need to pay more for your season tickets now. So it's going to be all about how they can do TV deals, ticket sales, all sorts of ways, you know, creative, I guess, whatever you want to call it, to go out and get more money. But yeah, if you're going to want to compete in the Big East in basketball and football, you better be able to come up with $20 million a year to pay these players, because that's the going rate. So
the bane of class action lawyers' existence are these lawyers who come in and represent objectors at the 11th hour. And a lot of times objectors are just making some nuisance objection, hoping to get a little money out of the deal in order to let the settlement go through. In this case, this case has been pending for 5 years, and the judge preliminarily approved a $2.8 billion settlement. And then as it came close to settlement approval time, out come the objectors. Now, in this case, the objectors' counsel is a legit good lawyer, Steve Modo, and he's got a coalition of former athletes and current athletes and parents behind him. And so my question is this, do you think that the May 7th deadline is going to stick? Are they going to get it approved this week, or are we looking at more litigation?
I don't know. I mean, they said what I've read is unless they agree to grandfather all of these athletes in, which is going to be a big deal. You're talking about tons of student athletes who will still, I guess, have to be paid by these universities. Their scholarships will still have to be funded, which is a controversial issue, of course. Then she's not going to approve the settlement at all, and you know it's either going to be pushed back or litigation keeps going. But you're talking about potentially just like hundreds and hundreds of student athletes at all of these schools that will have to be grandfathered in to this deal.
It's just wild. I mean, it feels like every single week college sports is thrown, you know, thrown for another loop. I mean, it's just unbelievable right now what we're seeing, how it's just constantly a moving target and changing, and it's just a mess.
I mean, it's why most of these programs now have CEOs.
Right.
Or GMs.
And look, I don't, if you're going to go this way and you're going to have, I mean, you're now dealing with like programs that are going to be getting tens of millions of dollars. Like you have to have a GM. This is no longer college athletics. I mean, this is professional sports, as we've kind of joked about.
Yeah, but some of these GMs, some of these GMs though are really just, you know, ceremonial or, right? I mean, like, right. Like Steph Curry's, I think, the GM now, Davidson, right? I mean, he's not actually performing. He's kind of busy, he's running right? I mean, he's got something going on. I mean,
no, but some of the bigger...
Isn't Gronkowski one?
The bigger bigger programs like Carolina, Alabama, those teams, they're all hiring GMs to deal with the whole NIL transfer portal and let the coaches be coach.
Yeah, that's why they hired Belichick.
Yeah, well, Belichick hired a GM.
It's his girlfriend, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, look, we'll see what happens on Wednesday. It comes with this deadline or not, but yeah, it's, you know.
Are there any college fans happy about this? I mean, is this a good thing for college sports, or does it get to be a good thing?
It's the death of college sports.
Your football roster increases. You should be excited about that. You get 20 more players.
God. That's 40 for Pope. He's got to pay attention to. Maybe 60 with North Carolina now.
I know. I'm losing count.
That's a lot. That's a lot. Right. I mean, look, we knew what was going to happen here. These football programs are all going to, you know, that's going to be the emphasis. And you're going to start seeing all sorts of, I mean, it's just going to become ridiculous. And watch for all of the glamour and flair that comes with it. Everyone's going to be getting new stadiums to compete, new weight rooms. I mean, it's just going to be like a professional organization.
Before we go on, hey, Rooster, tell us a little bit about some of our partners and supporters.
Number one, Milk's Company Injury Board just came off a hugely successful gathering out in Oregon, where lawyers from around the country and Canada and Western Europe all gathered and networked and learned a lot.
It was awesome.
It was in Aruba.
Every minute of it was awesome.
That was the food.
The wine was good. We drank a lot of wine. We missed you guys.
If you want to join a premier lawyer networking organization, go to injuryboard.org. Secondly, we have Digital Law Marketing, which is about to produce the SMQB's website. They do websites and all form of digital marketing for law firms. They're the best. I've tried many over the years, and this is the company that is actually producing in terms of new clients. So go to digitallawmarketing.com. And then finally, our third sponsor this evening is Assembly Software, makers of the new Neos cloud-based case management program. They also own TrialWorks and Needles. Assembly.com.
And let me just say this about Assembly. Pope and I, well, this is a good segue for us. We were at the Formula One race with them this weekend, and they were talking about some of their AI features. Wow, it's going to be pretty cool, the stuff you can do right in your case management system. So that's exciting stuff.
We use Assembly and love it, and I'm just, you know, they've got this online university. I'm learning more about it all the time.
It's and if you're stuff. A litigator, they've got some great tools with AI to prepare you to go to war.
All right. Well, Pope, tell us a little bit about F1. Miami Grand Prix, fourth year. I think they just signed an extension into 2,492 or something like that.
I think
like
you
that.
And I calculated it's 2,041.
Yeah,
By then, yeah. I'll be 75. You'll be 65. We'll be, you know, put out to pasture by then, and SMQBs, who knows who we've turned it over to, but, what a great weekend, Bison. That is, the Formula One circuit comes to the U.S. for three races, and they're all very distinct, but Miami is quite a show. People are there to see the cars, the people. There's always a good, sweet party going on that you can, hop into. Piastri and Norris for McLaren are clearly head and shoulders above the rest of the field right now. Even though Max got the pole in a dramatic qualifying session on Saturday afternoon, wasn't able to hold the lead, and it was pretty clear early on that the McLaren cars had a quicker pace. So I think we're shaping up for an interesting season that I don't see Max being able to defend his championship. I think we're looking at somebody new. It was also fun to watch Kimi Antonelli, who is he 18 for Mercedes, the number two driver.
He just turned 18 if he's 18, because he was 17 when he started the season.
Yeah, he won the pole for the sprint, and he got boxed out at turn one. Bison and I were on turn one, grandstand, and we had just a great shot of the cars coming down, and it had been raining, so they were all spraying, which was a little different element, but, Kimi got boxed out going in the first turn, but he's going to be a championship driver at some point. But I think this is the drama between Oscar and Lando is only going to get more intense as we move over to Europe for the next set of races, including Monaco.
Kimi looks like his car and his speed are on line with McLaren, but he just needs some race experience, because he's doing great qualifying and then having a hard time on turn one in the last couple of races.
Yeah, well, I mean, these guys are all cutthroat, right? I mean, and that killer instinct, I think a little bit when you're 18, I think you got to develop it a little bit. Now, he probably will. He'll get there. And the more times he gets shoved off the track at a start like that, he's going to learn he's got to develop that killer instinct. But more up to that point, does Lando Norris have it? I've got serious questions now. He has been kind of the golden boy leading into this season. I think we're 25% of the way through the season now. And Oscar Piastri is, you know, Pope, you said McLaren was head and shoulders above everybody else. I think it's not far off to say that Oscar is driving heads and shoulders above Lando right now. I mean, he's won three races in a row.
Yeah. First time for McLaren in years.
He finished second, right? What's wrong with that?
Hey, Ricky Bobby.
If you're not first,
you're last.
Okay. Yeah. Everybody knows that. No, I mean, I think Lando had a tough start, you know, arguably, I guess he got forced off the track in the start and fell down to sixth place and had to drive all the way back. So he had a pretty good drive. I mean, I don't think there's any question. I saw some stat that McLaren could have pitted on the last lap of the race and still come in and won and taken first and second with 10-second gap between them. So those cars were just crushing
They're
everybody.
They're 30 seconds ahead of Russell.
Yeah. But I don't know, man. I'm worried about Lando. I mean, I think this has got to be messing with his psyche. We're going to have to see how tough he really is because I don't know. I'm not sure that he can handle this.
Well, I don't think the team is going to do anything for him now. Like, you know, last year, a couple times they had Oscar stand down on some of those races in positions where Lando could get more points. Those days are over.
Way over.
Lando's got to do it on his own.
Oh, yeah.
And
he's lucky they're even allowing him to race Piastri late in a race.
Yeah.
No, Lando.
Yeah.
When Oscar's in the lead for the championship,
yeah,
the other teams would tell Lando to back off.
But Lando's got to do better on qualifying. Because Oscar's been beating him on qualifying, and you know it's all about the race to the first turn or very shortly thereafter. Because once you pull away, you know it's gonna unless there's a virtual safety car or rain or something, you know the race is gonna be over at that point.
So I don't think we could talk about this race without mentioning Ferrari, and not just because they're slow, but they are. I mean, look, that team has culture problems and strategy problems, and we've watched it year after year after year, and it doesn't look to be any better. I mean, yesterday they kept Lewis behind Charles for longer than he wanted to. He thought he had a chance at catching up to Kimi to move from seventh to sixth, and they held him up there, and he didn't, you know, so he didn't get out. Then they did finally let him go around Charles, and Charles felt like he was getting hung up. And then at some point, they told Charles, Lewis is going to let you by during this lap. Well, they forgot to tell Lewis that. So Charles is talking to his engineer saying, what's going on? You know, in the meantime, you know, he's burning up his tires, trying to keep up, waiting for the opportunity to pass. And they didn't tell Lewis until a lap later. And then when they did let him go, you hear his engineer comes on and says, science is 1.4 seconds behind you. And Lewis snaps back at him. He says, you want me to let him pass too? So, I mean, there is a problem there. And that team, this is not what Lewis signed up for. They got to get their shit together and fast. Right. So
last year, you know, I went to Miami F1 and Lando won and, you know, we were like in complete and utter shock, I remember, because Max had sort of been dethroned. And, you know, what has happened this year? What in the last 12 months, Red Bull has taken a step back. Max has taken a step back. Why is McLaren dominating all of a sudden after in the last 12? What have they done? Is it strategy? I mean, obviously the cars maybe are better. It seems a pretty dramatic shift.
Well, I think you've got two hotshot drivers in the fastest car on the circuit. I think that's the answer. You know, I think Zach Brown came in. You know, he's not my favorite guy on the grid, but he came in and he had a plan as CEO and as principal, and he's executed it, and he's created a, you know, McLaren's back to being a behemoth on the track. I mean, they have the best car right now. I don't think it's even close, and they have the guys who can drive it.
Wasn't there some discussion, too, earlier in the season that there are some major changes coming next season
in
terms of limitations on the cars. And some teams have focused more on looking ahead towards next year with their development of their cars. Others, like McLaren, have said, we're going to focus on winning this year. And so next year, it may actually hit them hard.
Right.
Who knows?
That's right.
I think that's going on with some of the teams, and it could be that Red Bull is one of them. Of course, Red Bull also doesn't have a decent second driver yet.
Yeah.
To protect Max.
Yeah, Yuki is struggling.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Checo Perez is being vindicated every weekend, every race right now. So, all right. Anything else? Moose Jaw, it's your time to shine, buddy. Let's talk NHL playoffs.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Last night.
Congrats, Moose. Congrats. You got to be pretty happy, first of all.
Oh, I was real happy. But, God, last night, I texted you guys last night and said, is there anything better than NHL overtime when you don't have a team that you're cheering for because you can just watch it and enjoy? I mean,
it was amazing.
It was incredible. I mean, for them to score two goals in the last 2 minutes, one with 1.6 seconds, and as great as Dallas's comeback was with Rantanen, this was better. this was better.
No, Winnipeg because, said, hold my beer.
Yeah. And good for them. But that was unbelievable. And I got to tell you, the playoffs this year, just overall, the intensity, the physicality, everything has been off the charts. I mean, the playoffs have been fantastic. Even the Washington-Montreal series, which was 4-1, everyone came out of that series saying, I know it was 4-1, but it sure didn't feel like 4-1. You know, everyone was coming out of there saying that was, felt like a 6-7 game series. Tampa.
Who said that? I felt like Spencer it was a Carby. Sweep.
No, Spencer Carby said it after the series. Now, I will tell you, I'm a little pissed off. I think Tampa got screwed. I do. Because Aaron Ekblad should never been in that game when he scored the tying goal. I have no idea how a referee standing right in front, right beside Ekblad, when he gives a forearm shiver to Hagel's jaw. And he got suspended for 2 games. He's going to miss the opening game tonight of the series, but he should never have been in that game. So I think Tampa did get screwed a little bit.
Now I have my excuse.
No, I'm not saying they would have won the series, but that game might have been very different. But we go on, and tonight the Leafs and the Panthers start at 8 o'clock. I do not know why it's at 8 o'clock. Well, I do know why it's at 8 o'clock, because the NHL draft lottery is at 7. So I hope I can stay up late enough for the game. But I am a little bit worried as a Toronto Maple Leaf fan. I will tell you, you're playing the Stanley Cup champions, and they play a very hard style of hockey. They're right on the line of dirty. You know, some of them cross it, if you can get away with it, that's fine. That's part of hockey. That's part of any sport, right? If you can get away with it, then fine. But it'll be interesting to see how the Leafs take Florida's first punch. That's, you know, do they do the traditional Toronto turtle and run away, or do they fight back? Now, I think with Craig Berube, they're going to fight back. And I think it's going to be a very physical 7-game series.
Well, you got home ice, Moose.
Yeah, home ice has never been so great for the Leafs. They got booed off the ice in game 5 here against Ottawa. So we'll see. So much is going to just depend on how this first game goes.
How are you going to handle their defense, the way they shut down Cooch?
Yeah.
Which was disgusting. I mean, they couldn't get a shot off. It seemed like, I mean, how do you match up with their defense?
Well,
because that's going to be a huge part of this.
All I can tell you is in the first series with Ottawa, the secondary scoring from other Leafs was really good. So that's going to be the key. The secondary scoring for the Leafs from, if you take the Austin Matthews line out, and they're the ones who are the main scoring line, let's say. But then you've got Tavares, Nylander, and then Max Domi. And I would not be surprised if you see the fourth line that's led by Scott Laughton have a big series and get key goals at certain times. I think the one thing for Florida is they're facing a Leaf defense that they've never seen before. The Leafs have some of the biggest defensemen in the league now. And this is a very different team than Florida's played against in the past. So I think it's going to be who has the best secondary scoring and who's got the better goalie over the 6-7 games, hopefully.
All right, Moose, give us a prediction.
I've got to go with the Leafs in 7 just out of loyalty to the blue and white. And I did pick them for the finals, so I got to stick with that. I stick with my picks, right, Pope?
Well, until they're not there.
Yeah.
Well right, but right. I stuck with Colorado through the series, and now I will deliver 25 Looney coins to you in San Francisco.
I want to hear, Moose, your breakdown, though, of what happened to the Avs. I mean, obviously they ran into a team that was, you know, had eliminated them in game 7s in the last 10 years, like 3 times. I mean, they've owned them. But, you know, the Avs looked like they were the better team most of that series. What happened?
They did. You know, I wish I had an answer. because if I did, I'd probably be coaching an NHL team or being a GM of an NHL team. The one thing I did, I noticed a stat of that the big guns of Colorado, Nathan MacKinnon, Cale Makar, Gabriel Landeskog, have never, ever had big game sevens.
Hmm.
And I don't know if that, do they shy away from the moment? Is the pressure too much? Who knows?
Well, and MacKinnon had a goal in the third period. You thought that was the nail in the coffin right there.
Yeah, yeah. And listen, I don't think anyone expected Mikko Rantanen to have 12 points in his last seven periods. And that's what it was. It was two games plus a period that he had 12 points. It was incredible. Listen, I think there's a lot of soul searching now in Colorado, and what do they need? And I can tell you what they need. They need a goaltender. They need a frontline goaltender. And unfortunately, they didn't have one this year.
Yeah,
and
Blackwell let a couple soft ones in.
Yeah, and this was like, and Blackwell and their backup weren't even the starting goalies at the beginning of the year. They've had to revamp that. They need to find a goalie because goaltending is always the most major part.
But talk about karma a little bit, Moose. The fact that the Avs had Rantanen for most of the year.
Well, you know, they
traded him to the Hurricanes, and he ended up with the Stars and did him in, his old team that he was with most of the year.
Yeah, no, and I spent 10 years with him.
Moose, give us a prediction on Dallas-Winnipeg. We're going to do a little lightning round here to get through NHL. So tell us, all what do you got in Dallas-Winnipeg?
I think Connor Hellebuck gets past his demons and Winnipeg takes it in six.
All right. Wow. Six. Okay.
But hold on. I want to say one thing. I don't know if you guys watched the handshake line last night of the Winnipeg game. To see the Braden Schenn and Luke Schenn embrace after that series was phenomenal. Love that. Anyways, Vegas and Edmonton. I'm going to go with Edmonton.
And what's something we want to watch in that series?
Connor McDavid. Connor McDavid. It's very simple.
McJesus.
And hopefully Stuart Skinner never sees the net again, because if he does, then McJesus is going to have to score about 9 or 10 goals a game.
Wow. Okay. All right. And then probably the series that's going to lead to the Stanley Cup champion. Let's talk about Carolina, Washington.
I am sticking with my original statement that Carolina will get past Washington. Washington does not have the physicality and the shutdown defenseman necessary to beat Carolina.
You said that, and I don't, you know, look, I don't watch as much hockey as you do, but man, Washington seems pretty physical to me. I don't know.
You listen, against the eighth seed, they are. Against Carolina, and remember, Montreal is a smaller team. I mean, the way Ovechkin ragdolled Cole Caulfield in game one. You know, that's not going to happen against Carolina, but hopefully all the series go 6-7 games and it's fantastic hockey.
Logan Thompson keeps playing the way he's playing.
He's playing pretty well. Yeah. He's playing pretty well.
Yeah.
Playing pretty well. See.
All right. Anything else on hockey? Boost Jaw, always a pleasure. Thanks for being here. Congrats on your Leafs getting through to the next round.
Good luck, Moose Jaw.
Yeah, good luck, Moose. We're rooting for
you. Go Leafs, go. We'll see you guys soon.
Rooster, NBA playoffs.
Yes. Well, first of all, happy Cinco de Mayo, everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, baby.
Of course.
I celebrated earlier today with a couple of margaritas and a Pacifico.
Did you? So. Oh, good for you. Okay. All right.
Coming down. Right.
Let's go.
This should be, this should be tight. Try to pick it
this
up
should be
now.
A tight segment. Right.
Pick it up, right. Baby.
Yeah. So, you know, we're down to four teams in each conference after some of the upstart younger teams got eliminated by the older, more experienced teams. You have to take your hats off to the Pistons, who looked really solid against the Knicks. I'm impressed by Houston. They need to learn how to shoot, but otherwise they're a damn good team. And even though the Magic only won one game against the Celtics, they get healthy, they're going to be a hell of a team also. But now we're down to Knicks versus Celtics in the East and Pacers versus Cavs. And then in the West, Golden State versus Minnesota and Denver versus OKC. So these are all kind of chalk teams right now. I'm asking right now for the next game, the Celts are favored -9.5 against the Knicks. The Cavs, even though they're already down 1-0, are favored -9.5 against the Pacers. Minnesota -7.5 against Golden State. Even though Golden State just went to war and, you know, limped through that series, and just made it out against Houston, they're only +7.5. Denver in OKC is -10.5. Of those series, which team do you guys think has the best shot at pulling off an upset and winning the series? Pope?
Oh, I think the Pacers. Pacers won 3 out of 4 in the regular season. They won game one. I mean, it was close, but it wasn't like a, you know, last minute game. They match up really well against the Cavs. And
it wasn't close. It was 117-98.
I think the Cavs have big problems unless they win game two. And the Pacers are playing with a lot of confidence right now. So that's where I see, you know, the potential upset. And I see the other three series going chalk with Thunder, T-Wolves, and Celtics.
Well, I think it's – all right, I'll just to be a little different, I'm going to take the Warriors because they have Steph Curry. And I just don't know that you're ever out of a game – or series, as long as you have that guy, he seems to just pull it out and deliver. You know, this could be Timberwolves, Warriors, a little bit of a changing of the guard, even though it's a 6-7. I mean, you know, the Thunder have to be the big dog out west for the foreseeable future right now. But maybe you're going to see a little changing the guard here with the Warriors and Timberwolves. It's kind of youth versus experience. But don't count out Steph.
I mean, but Ant is playing out of his mind right now. And, yeah, you know, they've got that, like I said earlier, they've got that new big three emerging with Ant, Randall, and McDaniels. And then they've got Gobert and Nazarid at center. They're a tough team. And yeah, Warriors barely got out against the Rockets. I thought the Rockets would actually win game 7. Warriors blew a 3-1 lead.
Yeah.
And, you know, playoff Jimmy is doing his deal, but they just don't have – Buddy Hield went off. He had 9 of 11 from 3 and 33 points. And but for that, you know, the Warriors might not have got out of the first round.
Hey, man, you took yours.
Don't see it.
You took your pick.
Yeah.
You took yours.
Come on.
I got mine.
We're all waiting with bated breath on Milk's choice.
I'm taking the Nuggets. You guys have to tell me why Oklahoma City is so much better than them. Didn't they just win the NBA Finals a couple years ago? Don't they have Jokic and Murray?
They did. You're right. They have playoff
what is, Jamal why is, Murray is why back, too. High on this team?
The rest of their guys suck. They got rid of
they fired Caldwell their coach.
Pope. He's gone. They fired their coach.
So? 2 weeks before
Porter's
the season,
playing like dog shit, and it's down to Jokic and playoff Jamal.
Yeah, but I mean,
can't count those two guys out ever.
Oklahoma City has like very little weakness. I mean, they're healthy. SGA is going to take it to the next level. You know, this is a matchup of the two most likely MVP 1-2, SGA and Joker. I don't know. I mean, maybe Nuggets get a couple, but I don't see it, Milk. I want to hear more. Why?
I'm going to go with Bison. I've got Golden State as the most likely upset candidate because you can almost count on Rudy Gobert disappearing during the playoffs for at least one series, not playing defense and not scoring. Also, if you watch that last Houston game, I'm with you, Pope. There was a lot going on in Houston's favor until Amen Thompson hurt his calf. He actually had closed Steph down. Steph had no points until about 33 seconds left in the first half. But if you watch carefully, he still had a hell of a half because they were double teaming him all the time, even when he didn't have the ball. And he was running everybody away from one side of the court so that Buddy Hield and Draymond had complete openings to either drive to the hoop or Buddy taking a three. He hustled and played sort of like, who was that guy? Rip Hamilton. He played like Rip Hamilton, never stopped moving the whole time on offense. Reggie Miller-esque also. And The guy's 37 years old and was running people ragged. And then you can't discount playoff Jimmy either, Jimmy Buckets.
Yeah.
He could come alive and carry a team all by himself. I think that Minnesota is a better team, for sure. But if I have to pick an upset candidate, I'm going with the Warriors. Rooster. They seem to have a little magic going
Rooster,
on
what about the Knicks?
Yeah, you got to be, come on, New York, Boston. Yeah, this has got to be there? A fun. This is, I mean, Boston's a better team, but aren't you?
Boston's a better team. I really think Tibbs is going to have to come up with some different game planning than what we've seen so far, which, as I've been bitching the whole time, amounts to Jalen Brunson pounding the air out of the basketball, you know, till there's this 2 seconds left on the shot clock, and then taking either a fadeaway or whipping the ball to somebody else who has to put up a quick shot. If the Knicks don't come up with a movement offense with some passing involved, the Celtics are going to eat them alive, because the Celtics are a good defensive team and they have a lot of bodies to throw at you.
I guess we've got a lot of questions about some of the futures of some of these teams and players, right? Like the Lakers and Giannis and all these guys, right?
And the Celtics. The Celtics have a $500 million payroll next year if they don't make some changes.
They're going to probably have to make some changes.
Sounds like the Yankees.
It sounds like the Yankees. Yeah.
So this is the year they're going to have to, you know, they need to win it this year. They've got a healthy Porzingis finally, and the big two are playing well. I mean, it's hard to imagine a finals that isn't the Celtics and OKC at this point, but I think the Knicks will fight and claw and make the Celtics work hard. And games is going at least six. The series will go at least six games, maybe seven. But I don't know. I don't see the Knicks upsetting the Celtics.
Can we do a quick autopsy on the Lakers?
Go ahead. Yeah. What are the late? I think LeBron retires or not, the Lakers need help next year.
Shams is saying he's coming back for one more year. I could see him coming back for one more year, but you know, he's diminishing returns. I mean, clearly, he's showing, he's long in the tooth, and you know, Luka had a great series, led them all in stats, averaged, I don't know, 28 points or so. And he can't do it himself. Again, I said this in our NBA preview that Pelinka left him exposed by not getting a big man when they traded AD away. And I mean, they just got torched in the interior. So, you know, the Lakers are going to have to get a big man. They're going to have to use some of the trade collateral that they have to go get somebody. And Austin Reeves is still, you know, young and he's improving, but Lakers are a flawed team right now, and Pelinka's got a lot of work to put them back to where they're going to be in the upper tier of the West.
I mean,
the Lakers need a big man, even if the guy can't score. They just need someone to be a rim
defender.
Yep.
I think the LeBron comment was pretty gratuitous, Pope. I mean, he averaged 41 minutes in the series and over 25 points, 9 rebounds, and almost 6 assists. That's long.
Well, he had
a couple
big games, but he also disappeared in a couple games.
Damn good. I'm not sure LeBron's the problem with the team.
Yeah, they didn't lose that series because of LeBron. They lost the series because they can't defend the rim.
And the paint. Yeah, I mean, thing about LeBron, too, though, is he probably would led Luka in whining. I mean, there were many, many plays where LeBron was bitching to the refs and the play went the other direction. Yeah. I like LeBron. He's not the GOAT, and we'll see if he can come back for next year.
It's just pure hate, man. Just pure hate. That's all it is. All right, Rooster. I know
fake an injury.
Rooster, the truth. You want to talk about Pop?
Yeah, I just think we should show our respect to him. He coached one team for 29 years, won 5 championships. And it's just revered by his former players. Even Kawhi Leonard, who had troubles with Pop at the end of his career with the Spurs, came out today right after the loss, the Clippers loss to Denver, stopped the interview and just paid tribute to Pop. He's one of the greatest coaches ever in the NBA. And when he made the announcement, when they had the official announcement, Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili showed up to stand by his side. That's how loyal his ex-players are to him. And so just wanted to recognize him as one of the greatest of all time. And even today, if he was able to coach, would be probably one of the top two or three coaches in the league.
Yep.
At his age. The only other thing we wanted to talk about was, does anybody think that Giannis would actually demand a trade out of Milwaukee? Because they're certainly not going to voluntarily trade the guy. They have him under contract through 2027, and everyone's talking about Giannis is out. Well, he'd have to ask to be out, because they'd be crazy to just trade him right now. Plenty of time left on that contract.
Maybe they rebuild. I mean, Dame is going to be out for most of the next year.
Yeah.
Maybe it's their opportunity. I mean, they, you know, I did listen to Bill Simmons a little on the plane today, and there was some, you know, just kind of speculation. But what about a Giannis to the Lakers?
What can the Lakers give up to make that happen?
Luka. Well, they'd...
Luka.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you're talking about, right? Comparable.
Luka's a free agent this summer.
Yeah. I don't think Giannis goes anywhere. I just don't think he's built that way to demand a trade.
He's you know, given some interviews in other vent forums, you know, like Greek podcasts, et cetera, where he's basically expressed his loyalty to the Bucks. I don't think he's going anywhere either, although I'd love to see the Knicks trade Kat and Mikal Bridges for him. That's palatable, at least, to the Bucks.
Yeah.
Can even throw in a draft
first round pick.
Yeah. Because if he wants to demand a trade, he's only going to do it if he can win a championship. That's been his thing. He needs a second championship to secure his status in his own mind.
Well, and that's the problem is, you know, you go somewhere and they have to give up some of their best assets. So now you're right back to not having the roster you thought you were going to have, right? Because they've got to trade, you know, whoever's trading for him has to give away some of their key players. So it's hard. It's hard.
Yep.
All right, guys. Who's got a punch?
It's this week's punchable face.
I don't have a punch, but I'll tell you that the Ravens just announced that they have released the all-time leader in field goal percentage, their kicker, Justin Tucker, amid all these multiple massage therapists' allegations of sexual misconduct. So.
Sounds like he can't kick field goals anymore.
If true, he gets a future punch.
It sounds like you're cocking your fist back.
Yeah.
Nace is so devastated right now, he can't draft him in this year's fantasy draft.
I'm not sure I've ever had him on my team.
I'm going to pick up on my head scratching over some really good baseball teams that are terrible this year. And point out that it looks to me like the Orioles season is already over.
How is that possible?
Their starting pitching staff from last year, either they let them walk or they're hurt. And now they have a pitching rotation that includes Charlie Morton, whose ERA is 9.7 so far. And their overall starter's ERA is 5.43. They are 13-20 after 32 games, and they're just dead for the year. And it's a sad thing to see. I thought it was great for baseball that they were back, and just like that, overnight, they're terrible again.
I think we've got to stop and recognize Aaron Judge. And Milk, I know this will be painful for you, but this guy is hitting .423. His on-base percentage is over .500. He's getting on base more than he's not right now. And his OPS, is on-base plus slugging, is a ridiculous 1.287. Ridiculous. I mean, that's 280 points above his career OPS, which hadn't been so bad. I mean, this is a bananas season that he's putting together.
Meanwhile, Juan Soto seems to have found his warning track power with the Mets.
Yeah, he sure has. He is not having a good season. Not having a good season. That
your
is
lucky
sure.
house isn't on the pod, Nace.
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, these things shake out. I mean, Judge isn't going to hit 423 all season, so there's a lot of baseball left. I'm just trying to recognize what he's done to this point, though.
Milk, I have a buzzer beater for you. Our two teams, our two college basketball teams, Florida and UConn, have announced that they will play each other next year in the Jimmy V Classic.
I love it.
It's going to be awesome.
You're going to get beat again. That's going to be
no.
Any other buzzer beaters, guys?
Well, I think we ought to at least mention the Derby and was it Sovereignty? That what was it? 13 yeah. to 1, 10 to 1?
I thought it was 7-1, right?
7-1. All right.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Sovereignty.
It wasn't like a major upset.
Right. In the mud. So who knows if that horse is going to compete for a triple crown or not. But, you know, only one horse can win the triple crown now, and that is Sovereignty.
Keep an eye out.
Shout out to Scotty Schiffler here in Dallas.
Yeah, I was going
to
say that.
Boat race, the competition in one of the, you know, not a signature event. I think they had two guys in the top 20 play. The old Byron Nelson, I think it's called the CJ Cup now. But Scotty shot 31 under to win by 8 strokes and had tied for the lowest PGA score for 4 rounds in a tournament. So at least he's off the snide because he hadn't won a tournament this year, even though he's played really well. Just hadn't won. So we'll see if he goes on a run. We got 2 weeks from now, the PGA. Rory and Scotty and Bryson. Let's see what happens.
Coincidentally, I would have shot a 253 as well at the Bryan and Nelson Classic in one day.
Yeah.
So it was good for him in four days.
All right, fellas. Good show. Good week. Lots of playoffs to keep an eye on. Go Caps.
Go Knicks.
Later.